How are you? I wanted to go to your husband's deal too. I was kind of bummed I was in here. So anyway, so last night we talked about looking at the neighborhood, and I don't know if anybody went to Michelle's presentation about, I was thinking a Bible study this morning where David talked about how isolated we sometimes are in our neighborhood, how we really need to get out and meet our neighbors. And I thought, boy, that's very apropos for what we're talking about last
night.
That's
amazing. That was written in 62.
Yes, with the beginnings, I guess, of the suburbs. I told him I got to get that book. It sounds really good.
If it's still in print.
He said you can get an old copy on Amazon. Oh. So anyway, but I thought our today we're going to look at our internal environment. So we're going to look at our own church and the strengths and weaknesses and so forth, and what we're doing in outreach ministry, and trying to weigh what, have you got a pointer thing?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I see. But I really felt like the Bible verse that is really the theme for the whole summer was very appropriate for tonight. It's from 1 Peter, and it says, like good stewards of the many-colored grace of God, serve one another with whatever gift each of you has received. So we're going to be focusing a little bit on the gifts within our own congregation.
Just has to initialize.
Okay.
And be turned on. There we go.
Okay. Oh, I see. I can do. Oh.
Without him, press the button.
Oh.
Forward, back.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's what I needed last night. All right. Mm-hmm. So we looked at this last night as that we're doing our community assets needs and assessment, and now we're on congregational resources. Tomorrow we'll look at the partnerships. We'll try to pull from both of those and identify good partnerships. So I was going to give more of a recap of last night, but I think everybody that, and I can't remember your name now.
Ray,
that's right. I talked to you at dinner the other night. It was here. So taking an inventory, what kinds of services are you currently providing for the community? And you want to make a laundry list, but I think it's also good to, sometimes there's services that we don't even realize we're doing. I mean, I'm always astounded to find out things in my own congregation. I've been there for quite a while. So I really recommend, making a plan with your outreach committee or whatever the group is, interviewing church leaders, and then interviewing the stakeholders for those services within the church. So who are the people that are really doing the work and that have a vested interest in those ministries? And I really suggest sampling across generations and committees and various small groups. So, who, not just the same old people that we always think of. I mean, we all have those doers that are doing everything, or the most vocal people. And so it's really nice to get a cross sample. And so what I really propose is to do a little bit of qualitative research, and we're going to have just a little bit of qualitative research 101 here, where you, instead of just saying, do you think we should continue this, yay or nay, ask open-ended questions and take copious notes. When we do qualitative research in an academic setting, we actually tape record, and then we look at the transcripts afterwards, and so we ask a lot of different people and then look at the transcripts. But ask things like, and you want to tailor this to your own church and what you think is relevant, but do you feel the ministry is still viable? Is it still going? Does it serve a purpose? And sometimes we'll talk about it might serve an internal purpose, maybe. And sometimes that's important. Do you have trouble getting volunteers? So you wanna start ferreting out, are we really struggling to provide this service or do this outreach? Are there people who have a passion for it? Why or why not? Are you getting the resources that you need to provide the service? So maybe you've got someone that's very passionate about something and feels strongly that it ought to continue and has some good reasons, But what kind of support do we perhaps want to offer to that person? And so if not, what do you need? And I already said a little bit of this. You want to ask questions until you reach what we call saturation, until you start hearing the same answers over and over. And then you know, okay, we've asked enough. And she's saying, this research test is part of the job interview. If you can see anything in it, you're far too impressionable to be a scientist. You're supposed to be objective. The reality is, when it comes to our ministries that we're doing as a congregation, none of us are objective, of course. We all have our vested interests. This is outreach ministry. Or did you want the science guy?
No, I think this is the one I want.
Okay, because we
church,
somehow we got
church outreach.
Yes. Yeah, okay, well, welcome. Come on in.
It's switched on the,
right.
On the schedule.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, they drew an arrow.
Okay. So we're just talking about doing an internal assessment of your own congregation and what are you doing now and so forth to kind of sort through perhaps what you should continue or strengthen and reinforce. So, as I said, you want to ask the same questions over and over again, not precisely the same. Sometimes people will, in qualitative research, will take you down another path that you hadn't really thought of, and you can add that then to the next set of questions. Oh, well, that's a good point. I wonder if other people feel this way as well. And that's perfectly okay. We want to get to the point where you're hearing some things over and over. You don't want to make this so huge that it's a really cumbersome project. I think 15 people is probably plenty if you go out to do interviews, because it's a lot to sift through when you're looking for themes. And then if you can transcribe at least the notes, if you have someone go out in pairs and you have someone taking notes, or tape recording is a bit much for this, but it doesn't have to be that precise. That's what we would do in research, but you don't have to, I think, be that precise with this. Just take notes. And then we want to identify themes that capture the overall attitudes and beliefs in the congregation. So we want to get a gestalt for, you know, what do people think about this particular ministry? So a cross-section, and people who at least know about it. You don't want to interview someone about a particular ministry that don't really know about it.
Bonnie,
yeah.
To just describe, in Oregon, our Bishop Dave Brower Reike is really hot on this one-to-one interaction, these conversations, and that's how we reached the themes that we wanted to choose our new pastor. And I could see that
oh.
you could possibly do this here. We
yeah.
go talk to people one-on-one.
Yeah.
You might have a transcriber, but you do also, as a side benefit, kind of develop a little relationship with
yes
others.
yeah and relationships, as we, I don't know if anybody was in Michelle's session last at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock, reconciliation, but you know, relationships are everything, not only with the people that we're doing outreach with, but within our own church. You know, how often are we divided? You probably don't have any of these problems at your church.
Yeah, right.
We've had so much turmoil in our church the last 10 years. It's really been tough. But yeah, it's a really great point. You know, just building those bridges again and commonalities. You can do this in groups too. You can have a focus group where you ask questions. It's a little bit more difficult to handle, and it's good to have definitely two people doing that, a note taker and someone who's facilitating that, because of course the danger is somebody dominating the conversation, and so you want to, you know, turn to Janice, we haven't heard from you. How do you feel about this issue? What are your thoughts? So you want to be very intentional, but it certainly is, sometimes it's a little bit easier in terms of time, but people want to feel heard, and so it's a very positive thing to do, and to take stock once in a while of where we are in terms of our outreach ministries. And I have an example that, my picture didn't come up on, or I can't remember. I had a picture of a little Somali girl. One of the projects I'm involved with is with in neighborhood in Seattle, it's mostly Somali families, refugees. And so my colleague and I, Danita Weiner, are you looking for a science or outreach ministry?
Outreach.
Oh, this is it. I'm here. It's a little confusing, so that's why I asked. Come on in. I'm Bonnie Bowie. I don't think I even said who I was at the beginning. I'm Bonnie Bowie from Seattle University. Mm-hmm. So, welcome. And so, just to give you an example of how we tried to group the themes of our qualitative research that we were doing with these we were talking to parents about some of the challenges around parenting, what they wanted to see in terms of programs, and their interface with the Head Start program, where there had been quite some conflict and mistrust. And so we typically, what you do, so if you're reporting this to the congregation, you kind of you pick a sub-theme that comes up from the conversation around your ministry. And so we have fear and mistrust in the system. And then we have a quote that sort of, that we think is typically illustrates that. And this is how it's reported from a researcher standpoint. And I think it really brings it to life. If you're using quotes in your own congregation, I would ask people, you know, you really sum that up nicely. Is it okay if we use what you said to sort of represent, because we're hearing that over and over again. Is that okay? Because it's a little startling sometimes for people to see their words up on the screen. Well, our dean, you know, oh yeah.
You don't attribute the quotes though.
No. Especially, you know, research, it's supposed to be, you know, everyone's protected. But our dean did this actually when she started at our school. She had one-on-one interviews with everyone. She had like four questions that she asked, and then she reported the themes to us. And I said some very direct things about the associate dean who's now gone. And I was really startled. Of course, she didn't have my name on it, but I, word for word, what I'd said on the screen, I was sort of, you know, sliding down in my chair. No one knew I said it but me. But and I just didn't know she was going to do that, and it sort of startled me. So, but I think, as I said, it really brings it to life. So this is not a church deal, but it was the only qualitative example I had in my library. So we had fear and mistrust in the system. We come from war and violence and hunger in the hope that we'll educate our children to give them better lives, not to come to a place that at the slightest opportunity your children are taken away. The Somalis really value their children, and CPS would see them out unsupervised, because where they come from, in villages, everybody's looking out for your kids. You don't necessarily, you know, it's just a whole different approach to parenting. And so so they ran into, several times these communities have run into, not just in Seattle, but all over the U.S. as we compare notes with colleagues, will run into problems with child protective services. And so that's what that's referring to. And so it's just, so as we report back to Neighborhood House, we bring this up that, you know, this is a bridge that, that, and this ties in so nicely with what Michelle said at 4 o'clock, you know, we really need to find ways in which we can mend those bridges and build them between the communities. So, but anyway, so this is very different from outreach ministry, but just to give you an illustration of how to pull together some of the themes that you're hearing, and then you know, pull together some quotes. So when you report off to your committee or the congregation, I think it's kind of fun and brings it to life. I also really recommend taking and, can you hear me okay back there?
Yes.
Okay, my voice is kind of soft, so I want to take an inventory of space and how you're using it. Our church has a lot of space, and you know, sometimes I wonder if we use it very effectively. And I really love to, I love Gantt charts. Do we have any like contractor builder people? I mean, this is a total contracting kind of tool where they have all the things down one side that need to be done in the construction project, and then you have dates and time, you know, dates across the top. And I think
I forgot it was called a Gantt chart. I've been trying to remember that for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's Gantt, and I think it's just the name of the guy that invented it. So, or an engineer, I'm sure, years ago. And I think they're incredibly useful. But you can just to get an idea of times of days and days of the week. I just started sort of filling this out, and then you can use. This is very easy to do on Excel, or you can just do it by hand. On graph paper or something, and then color in when spaces are being used and by whom, or when they're just being used. You could have different colors for by the different kinds of groups too, if you really wanted to get into it. So you could, is it internal meetings, or is it actually something that are you using your space for the community at all? You know, and that tells you something as well. Gives you some good information, and maybe. You know, I'm not saying that you have to use some of your space for outreach ministry, but it just gives you an idea of what you're currently doing. And that's the whole point of all of this. So I just did, you know, made up some stuff down here in the fellowship hall and so forth. So any questions about that? I see some peering. Okay. And then hopefully at the end, and you can have people help you do this. I mean, get together in a group of the people that are maybe most involved in the various outreach ministries. You can tell I like visual depictions of things. But you don't have to do this, and there's many ways of looking at it. But to get a big butcher block piece of paper and have people help you map out what you're doing, I think is very powerful visually to see what your emphasis is. And it was kind of fun. I started playing around with this. This is from our church, and it's actually not quite complete. But we do quite a bit with homeless outreach. And over the last, I'd say, 10 years, we've just kept adding to that, and it has become a real emphasis for us. And when I showed this to our outreach person before I left, I said, you know, we're putting a lot of time and resources and effort into this, and it's kind of cool. You know, when you see it up there depicted like this, and so I think we need to ask the question, is that where we want to put our energies? And I think it is. I think we have a lot of people that are very vested in it. So in that way, it's sort of gratifying to see what we're doing. But you can map out other things and say, ask the same question. Is this where we want to put our energies? And what I've done is I've got internal groups up here, like our outreach committee, our men's group, Welka, and youth. And what I tried to do was, by amount of effort and time, I have bigger or smaller balloons. So you could play around and, you know, do that. And then I've got our community partners, and I don't have all of them up there. I didn't have enough room on my slide, but Hope Link is one of them, and Sophia Way is, shelter for women, homeless women. Several other churches, which I didn't list. And then these are sort of our, what the end result of all that is. So we've got Food Rescue, you know, the Homeless Women's Support via Sophia Way, Cascade Compass Center, where we're providing some meals and support, and our Congregations for the Homeless, which if you're not from the Seattle area, we rotate, or actually, I think Seattle has Congregations for the Homeless, and East Side does, where 12 churches host homeless men for a month, and then they move to another church for a month. And we provide all the meals and so forth. And they have like a portable showers, and because we don't have showers at our church. It's a real, so it's kind of hard. So they bring in a camper type thing with showers and things in it. And the men sleep there, and they're on there. The whole point of this program is to move them into permanent housing. But jobs and permanent housing is a very, very effective program.
Life coaches,
yeah, it's an amazing program. And one of the reasons we are so vested is that we have one woman in our church who is one of the founding people, and And that's good and it's bad. And that I worry that it, you know, sometimes you have that one person who's doing it and then they burn out or stop doing it or whatever, and it kind of dies out. So while it's an incredibly effective ministry for us, and we all rally and get involved in that, including the youth and so forth, to cook dinner and so forth, she also puts a tremendous, she and her husband, Sterling Benson's on the board and so forth, and they put a tremendous amount of energy and time into that. And then I've got this kind of squiggly line over to the Temple Benai, because they're hosting Tent City right now, a moving city for homeless people. Is everybody, I'm looking around, are you all, where are you all from?
We're from Corvallis, Oregon.
Okay, so that's is that a Seattle thing where we have these tent cities that move around?
I think so.
And Portland had one at one time.
Yeah, Portland.
For homeless.
And Corvallis, I think they broke up the city and now we shelter the men, well, only in the wintertime though.
Oh.
And the women, we've only got about 6 women at the women's shelter and like 35 men at the men's shelter. I don't think it's just a Seattle thing.
Okay.
Unless, you know, having it be authorized and okay with the community, that might be just a Seattle thing. It was not okay with our community.
We've definitely
been
into that.
What do they call it in Portland?
I can't remember. But it's been moved a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it's been very controversial.
Yeah.
Well, in Seattle, they move every 3 months. But in the Edmonds area, they have the cold weather shelters that open when the temperature goes below 30.
Yeah.
And then they get picked up at the library and driven around to various churches.
Oh, okay. All right. So what's kind of nice about this is that it gives you this, you know, visual depiction of what you're doing, and just you begin to ask the questions. You know, hopefully you add to the interviews and say, you know, we're obviously putting a lot of time and energy into this, and we feel like it's worthwhile. And then from the interviews, and of course a key person for us would be to definitely interview Nadine and say, look, we all feel like this is a great ministry, but what do you need? What do you need in terms of resources and so forth so that this can continue? And maybe who else should we perhaps be bringing in as we look at the data from the interviews? And at one point we just realized that we were not able to do meals for 30 days. It just was too hard on us as our congregation shrunk. So we've brought in other partners to help us with that. And that's been very, very effective. I look like you're going to say something. No, I'm not caring, but okay.
Well, the other thing that does, because we're in a very small congregation, and all we can do is provide the food for a week.
Yeah.
So it gives, you know, you may have seen it as a diminishment of your church's capability, but actually it spread the ability, you know, the service providers to other congregations who couldn't take on the big, you know, hosting, but could help in a smaller way by providing food.
Well, you know, I think one of my biggest take-home messages is this week is that you just can't do it all. You know, we really need to pull in the partners where we can, other churches and agencies and so forth, and even partners that we wouldn't normally think of, you know, because, you know, so that I think it's a very synergistic kind of end result, you know, that it... The sum is more than the parts, right? So this is something I had a lot of fun with. That I thought, how can we, how can you map out your services that you're giving? And I actually have a master's in business as well, so I have a business strategic planning kind of background. And there's something called the Boston Matrix, which is how you plot products. So companies look at, and you know, you've heard of that term, the cash cow and the dog and so forth. Well, this is actually from that. And I thought it would be kind of fun it would be an interesting thing to ask people where you think your ministry not your ministry. We don't want to make this personal either, because, you know, people get very attached to their ministry. And so where do we think it belongs on this graph? And also that it's not necessarily bad. Like in business, the dog is really bad because it's got low market share and low, you know, profitability. So that's bad. So I changed that to old dogs because I thought, well, yeah, you know, because old dogs, sometimes we love old dogs, right? We're not ready to put them down. So I thought, sometimes we have ministries that, and I think a good example at our church is we have, well, you probably can name them at your church too. You know, we all have these ministries that just go on forever because we started them, you know, 30 years ago, and we feel like we can't let them go. And so ours, I think, is our food bank bin. And it's out on our narthex, and there's like two people that are really vested in that food bank bin. And it does do some good. So you have to look at this. So I was talking to our staff person. I said, it doesn't take a lot of resources. It takes us a little bit of space. These people really, really feel vested in it. And sometimes you have to look at, is it keeping those people connected to the church? So, you know, you weigh those things. If it's something that is not really, so these are the community needs that we're meeting and the people we are reaching. So it's not really meeting that big a need. It's small, a little bit, and not really reaching that many people. Another, to give you an example, it goes to HopeLink. And another example in the Stars Are Alignment that's just taking off like a rocket is our food rescue program that we've got. It's not ours, but we've gotten involved in this food rescue program with other churches and so forth, where you go to the grocery stores, and a lot, they're all participating. If you haven't heard about this, it's just fantastic. So it's like the Fred Meyer, Safeway, and so forth. And so we send, we train people how to do this. They have to have a special badge on. They go in, and they go back to the meat department, and they get it like a, sometimes you get a full shopping cart, or maybe two. We usually go in pairs of food that is expired, but it's still good. They get tons of stuff, and they take that to HopeLink. And people take turns from different churches and other organizations doing that. And so you compare that to the food bin that maybe gets five things a week in it, you know, a couple of cans of tuna or something. I mean, it's really reaching a lot of people. And for some reason, this ministry, which we've just been doing for maybe, oh, I know it's less than a year, 6 months maybe, 8 months, it's just taken off like a rocket for us. And HopeLink is so grateful. And so I say something like that that's really on the rise and is meeting needs is the Stars Are in Alignment, which I think in the business world they call the rising star.
That food rescue is actually the source of the food for a community dinner that the Edmonds Lutheran Church puts on once a week.
Oh, great.
So when you talk about difficulty of making meals for a whole week, well, the food comes from Food Rescue, and they gather it and plan the menu based on what they get.
Yeah, based on, that's great.
Yeah, that's a big relief, kind of, financially, if you do it, same people do it over and over again.
Yeah. And, well, that's great. The loaves and the fishes are like those steady outreach ministries that's the cash cow category that, you know, it's humming along. We're not putting a lot of resources in it. It's really meeting the needs. It actually is probably reaching a lot of people too, so it's probably up towards the other quadrant, but it's really something that we want to keep going. It's, you know, it's a steady kind of ministry. The problem child is... maybe we're reaching a lot of people, or, you know, more so than down in the old dogs, but are we meeting the needs? And I probably should have had another label along the axis here of, in terms of our effort and what we're getting out of it. I think we always have to look at that. And but maybe this is a ministry that is a good one. We just need to bolster it somehow, pull in another partner. You know, so in your interviews, as you talk to people and you find out, look, this is a ministry that's really needed, but I just need help here. You know, we just can't do it within our own congregation, or or you know, if you find out where are the gaps and how can we fill those.
Well, a problem child does seem more like it's using a lot of resources, mm-hmm. but isn't meeting very many needs.
Yeah.
More than reaching lots of people.
Right, okay. Right.
Okay. How often do you get the food from the grocery stores?
I think we go twice a week. We have different teams and different stores. I'm not directly involved in it. I know a couple of friends of mine go once a week, and then there's other people that go once a week, and so it seems like we've got to a different store, and then we're not the only congregation that's doing it. So I think they're hitting the stores every day. And she said sometimes they get, you know, a couple of cartloads. So in our area for Hope Link. And it's called Food Rescue. And if you want to talk to someone about it, I can put you in touch with somebody. So
even Starbucks participates in things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, with their pastries and stuff.
Oh. I'd like to get on that list. I was hopeful for coffee that they have sold.
Not the coffee.
So you kind of pull all this together, and this is not going to be the most, you know, I don't know, stringent. There's going to be some strong feelings that you have to consider. There's got to be some give and take and a lot of opinions that you have to sort through. But I think you need to ask yourself, you know, which ministries inspire passion? So my suggestion is, this is where I want to end up knowing, but maybe you want to know other things, and then you back into the questions that you ask people from there. But I want to know, you know, what's really inspiring us and taking off? And so, because it's certainly a lot easier to get volunteers, what are the ministries that are meeting the needs identified in our external assessment? Of course, when we looked at our neighborhood needs that we talked about yesterday, and the partnerships that we talked with, where do they perhaps need help in meeting needs? And you also have to ask yourself, which are the sacred cows? Which are the ones that you just know people won't give up? And you have to ask, am I going to take on that battle? And I can't answer that for you, because sometimes, like I said, we've got these couple of people, you know, is it just a couple of people and it's not really taking up a lot of resources, or is it something that is really taking a lot of time and energy and it's just not very effective? And what I do with that is I try, as I'm gently talking with people, I will try to get them to identify that perhaps what they're doing could be transferred to another area that's very similar, you know, by not arguing, but pointing out to them, bringing facts to their attention.
Or maybe it's reconfiguring it or giving it recognition, because I think a lot of times our food basket doesn't get much attention because it's just sitting there, mm-hmm. and we never talk about it, we never acknowledge it, but I'm trying to get it that, because once a week we do a collection for the food bank, that as part of that, when we take up our offering, we should take up the basket and acknowledge not just the people that are giving money, but also the people that are bringing product, and that if it became more visible and were reinforced and rewarded, it might get more people involved.
Yeah. So you might put some more resources and energy into making
and that's just recognition.
It
doesn't take any effort, but right. acknowledging and rewarding.
Yeah, and then bringing it to other people's attention to participate more. Yeah, and I think that's got to be a very individual congregation decision. And I think if some people really want to keep going with something, I'm like, great, more power to, you know, go for it. You know, we just can't get too frustrated about those things, because there's plenty of work and plenty of outreach work out there for everyone. You know, so, but I think we also have to ask ourselves, I think this is a very important question, which ones are sucking the lifeblood out of your staff? You know, because we definitely need to pull the staff into this conversation and say to them, what do you think's working well? and what isn't working well. Because I think quite often it's really their energies that keep things going. I don't know about your congregation. Sometimes there's certain people in the congregation that are really the worker bees that do a lot of work, certainly. Thank goodness we all have those people. But the staff as well, we can't forget our pastor. And then, as I said, which ones are dependent on one or two committed individuals, and maybe that's okay to have a ministry that's dependent on one or two people, knowing that if they go, they leave the congregation, or we have some people, when they die, because I know they're definitely going to be doing this until they just can't physically do it. Either we'll pick it up if it's really important, probably, or it will go, and maybe that's okay. So, okay. I think it's very helpful. I don't want you to feel like you have to be an accountant in this, but I do think it's important to assign costs and resources to outreach. And it's not like we want to get a return on our investment, like in finance or something, but we just want to be aware of perhaps volunteer hours, and maybe that's a great thing as As Mary Ellen was saying, recognition, we could say, hey, these are the hours we estimate that we put in, X hundreds of hours into this, and that's a great thing maybe for the homeless effort or whatever the effort is. The committees and groups that are contributing to the effort. And it's nice to ask staff, what percentage of FTE are you putting into various things of your full-time equivalent? So of your job, if you're full-time, or you put in, if they can keep track of things, and does that equate to where the congregation wants to put their energies? Is really where all this is going. So adding up all these resources, and then also going back to the space. How much space are we allocating to something, and is that where we want to be? When you add up everything. So as I said, this can be kind of a quick and dirty thing. It doesn't have to, if you have somebody who has that talent and they love to assign costs by square foot, great, like my husband. but something that's kind of a bone of contention for some people at our church is our daycare. Is it an outreach ministry or not? And it uses up quite a bit of space. And I don't even want to go there. It's kind of a controversial issue, but maybe it's a great use of space, because during the week it's all our big Sunday school area. We're really not using it, and so until we decide to do something different with it, they actually pay part of the utilities and so forth. They pay their share. So,
well, that's one of the questions: is what if you weren't doing it? What else would you be doing with your space?
Exactly.
We have that discussion with our labyrinth, because it does take someone to mow it, if we weren't doing it, what would that be doing? Well, the land would just be sitting there doing nothing.
Yes, yeah.
The other reason for gathering this data, too, is I think a lot of times we think we're not doing anything.
Yes.
And so, we don't really feel like we're doing anything. So if you gather what all you're doing and the number of hours, and then saying, you really are, we may not be making headlines, but we are doing something.
It's very affirming. Yes, I agree. And it not only helps you sort out maybe what your priorities are, but it's like, hey, we're doing some good work. And I think that's very important. And especially, when you start going down this path of an internal assessment, you may, as I said, there's always those ministries that are very near and dear to some people's hearts. So reaffirming that this is good work and we're not out to axe that ministry necessarily, but you have to tread carefully. And so thanks, that's a great point. Any other questions or comments? Okay. I can't recall how many. Oh, there's my picture. So I thought it would be fun. We have some time tonight. Last night I went to the very end We actually have some photography students involved in our project with the Somalis, and they, the pictures they have taken of these kids are just fantastic. They're, isn't that darling? So she's out in the playground running around with a head start.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to throw that in. I thought we could maybe break into groups and practice a little interviewing if you want. If you just wanted to sit around and chat, since we're a small group, I'm fine with that as well. But if you want to try doing an interview and ask about a particular ministry and that you're really very familiar with, and ask some, I can go back to those questions and try asking some of those questions to get a flavor for what that's like, we can do that.
I have a question on the information that you would gather now. What do you do with that? Do you publish it in your church banner that, you know, that goes out to everybody? Do you post it in the church? You know, what do you do with that? Those resources once that information is gathered?
I would perhaps do all of those things, and I think it depends somewhat on the culture of your congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Our congregation is a lot of engineers who love to sort through information, both at Microsoft and Boeing, and so. Boy, they want to see all the data and so forth. And so you might have a little report that you publish. But I would have forums where people come.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we found. I think it's best to over-communicate, especially if you're thinking about making any changes. You might first have the committee report to the council and say, these are our recommendations. That's sort of how it works at our church. And we want to share this with the congregation and get their input. We're feeling like... this is where we're spending our, obviously putting a lot of effort, and so we want to, you know, we want to continue in this direction, and so we want support from both the council and the congregation to, you know, back that up. So, and then having perhaps open forums, and then maybe at your annual meeting, or however you communicate something in the monthly newsletter. See and hear different things. I mean, don't you feel like have you all been on church council? It's always all the doers. I mean, don't you feel like you talk and you talk and you say things and then someone says, "Well, I never heard that."
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, sure.
So over communicate. Depending on how important it is to you, particularly if you want to implement a change, I think over communicating is just until you feel like you've. Everyone must have heard it 10 times, and then there'll still be someone who says to you, I didn't hear anything about that. So, but overdo it, I guess.
Okay, I have another question. Have you ever done any individual assessments of the people's gifts within the congregation?
Yeah. Our congregation loves to do that.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know where that information goes.
That's a good question.
Do you guys use it effectively?
Well, I don't know that it's effectively, no, but we did that one time where everybody had, you know, a piece of paper and, you know, posted it. And we did compile some of the information. And, you know, the people that love to bake bread, they did a couple little bread baking things and so forth. But, you know, it was not used like it should have been.
We use it every year.
Do you?
And so if you're the head of a committee or involved on a committee, you use it for calling people that might be able to help you do something.
Right. Yeah.
Now it's important you have a structure to get the information to people that use it and contact them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's worse than filling out that you're interested in something and you never get contacted.
That is exactly what I was going to say. I think and that's why I'm cautious about, you know, when I say to collect data. If it involves other people, you want to be sure that you're going to go back and let them know what you found. I think I feel like the questionnaire at our church goes down a black hole. And I'm sure somebody's using it somewhere, but I filled it out several times. And so I want to know, and I'm told that it goes into a database. And we purchased this kind of church database so that and that would be great. So if you needed a certain skill to do something, theoretically it should be great that you would get a list of people with that skill. I have to say, when I filled that out, I thought, I am not putting down something I don't want to do, you know. So I had told little white lies, but But no one's ever contacted me as a result, because everybody knows who I am. We don't have a real big church. So I think people do like to be asked, though, I think sometimes. Like, I'm a person that will step forward and say, sure, I'll do that. Or people ask me, I have a big mouth. But there are people that always surprise me when they say, well, it was so nice that someone was saying this about her husband, that they asked my husband to, and I can't think of what it was now. And it really meant a lot, and, you know, and she was surprised it hadn't happened in the past. And I thought, well, if you really want to, of course I'm thinking, if you really want to do that, why didn't you step up? But that's how I function, and there are many people who I think do wait to be asked. So some volunteers that we don't always think of could come out of that survey. So it works pretty well at your church?
Yeah, I've used it. I've used the data.
And you said, and then you've called on people that you might not think about to
right.
do something.
Especially new people.
Yeah.
That are
yeah.
coming in, and I think they really want to be asked.
Yeah.
And it's a key to being a part of the church, I think, to do volunteer activities and to get to know people and share those
yeah.
ministries. But if you just come in and you leave, like many people do right after the service, I think ultimately you feel disconnected with the church.
Yeah.
You're not connected.
Yeah.
Just my opinion.
You mentioned that you have a small church. Do you have two services on Sunday?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So,
and one is not very well attended.
Okay.
It's our
yes.
it's our the one with the band.
Okay.
But the people that go to that service, it's really important for them.
Yes, it is very important for them.
We
yes.
tried combining the services one summer, and I said, big mistake. And
yeah.
you know, the attendance dropped over the previous summer by about 30%.
Oh, we do combine in the summer.
Yeah, yeah, see, that didn't work for us at all. It just really,
yeah.
over summer, you know, because it does go down in the summer anyway.
Right.
But when you compared summer to summer,
yeah.
it dropped 30% more than a normal summer when you combined the services.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you a large congregation?
No.
No, okay.
Yeah.
So we have about 18 or 20 at the first service and, you know, 40 to 50 at the second service.
Mm-hmm.
No, that is small.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking back on when people volunteer that they have a skill, you know, it might be some skill that's not in high demand, and I'm going to make it personal. I have this little hobby that I do, and if I put that down as my skill, nobody's ever going to call me because nobody wants that stuff. Well, okay, but if somebody called me and said, I appreciate, the committee really appreciated knowing about this, and you have to word this carefully.
Yeah.
If anybody ever wants any magnet bookmarks, we'll call you, but we don't want a big, big bill. But anyway, you know, just say, you know, we'll be on the lookout for an opportunity to use your skill, and we've certainly got you on our list, and we want you to know that. Just to communicate to them.
Yeah.
To let
yeah.
them know that their thing was read.
Yeah. See, that's why I feel like it goes down the black hole, mm-hmm. is that I never, but as I said, no one's going to, I mean, they already know me so well. But I think that's a good point. So getting back to people, and again, you know, thanks so much for filling that out. And maybe finding a transferable skill. I mean, you must be very creative and artistic. There might be something else that sort of parallels that or that you could do.
Well, I did a brainstorming exercise sort of like that, where you would list, you know, things that people might not know about you or things that, you know, gifts that you have, and did it all on stickies, and you had groups getting together and matching things together. So, you know, maybe a magnet would be something you could give out when you have a community dinner as a gift to, or maybe it becomes a gift to newcomers. So
yeah.
you get that
yeah.
synergy looking at all the things that people have and say, all right, what two or three things can we bundle together into a new outreach project?
Yes. Now, I did. Was that out of the Natural Church Development deal? Because we did that exercise
too.
We
did too. Yeah.
And I loved the idea, but absolutely nothing came from it. And I think that my caution is it's really just from us. And is it really looking at the community needs? You know, maybe you could match them up. You could say, okay, we have this creative force here. But you really need to be
Well, it's sort of like from yesterday where you identify the community needs, and then today where you have the resources,
yeah.
and then have kind of a brainstorming thing. But you're right, you have to have someone willing to step up and do it too. Because we have an outreach committee, so we had a brainstorming thing of what sorts of outreach could we do. And then we went around and voted with dots as to who was interested in working on it. And there were some great ideas that no one put a dot next to. Mm-hmm. And then there were some that there was a lot of interest in. And then the next step, right, who wants to head this up? And then
nobody's
here. Yeah, that's what happened at ours too.
So that's also why in a small congregation, if you have someone that's doing something, you know, maybe it is in that lower quadrant, but at least someone's doing something and it's meeting their needs.
And maybe you look at that and build on it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that's why I didn't want to say, you know, it's the dog, but old dogs. That we may love and want to nurture along.
Maybe it's a small dog.
Or a small dog, yeah. I was trying to think of what I should call that quadrant. I had kind of a hard time with that. So, because I didn't want it. Hello. Anyway, well, we have a few more minutes. I guess we won't do our exercise, but I love hearing about your other experiences and ideas and so forth.
I'll just make one comment. I think one thing that we've found is that if we have any type of meeting, whether it's just the congregation or with community members, if we've got someone taking notes, mm-hmm. and particularly recording questions, you have to do something with that. Mm-hmm. You've got to provide then answers to those questions, even if the answer, you know, you can't answer it in the meeting, but you set it aside, but you've recorded those, and when you get more information as your process develops or, you know, whatever, getting back to people with that, you know, closure,
right.
I think is really, really important. And I think, one of the words that jumped off the page at me was trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a way of building trust and maintaining trust within either the congregation or between the congregation and the community,
right.
is by having that loop get closed.
Yes, yes.
Our local YMCA, for their suggestion box, they go and post it, they retype it so it doesn't have a handwriting, but they type what the question or the suggestion or whatever was, and then they give the response, and even if it's a, you know, we've tried that time slot before, and we didn't have the attendance, but we can see about in the fall, if we hear other people are interested, you know, so they give the history background on if it's been done before, and, you know, even if it's a no, they don't just say, we can't do it.
Yeah.
They give an explanation.
We have a website. As you said that, I just was thinking, you could post things like that on the website if you had a member sign-in kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a public and a private.
Mm-hmm.
Because keeping up a bulletin board like that, I think it's a great idea. But we're also, I mean, do you all use the internet and email and all that now? I mean, it's very rare that we find people that don't. So
I would guess 25% of our congregation is not.
Is not, yeah. We still have some percentage that doesn't.
People.
Yeah, ours too, I think, about that.
Yeah. Older people.
And sometimes they're long-term members, long-time members.
Yeah.
And then they feel left out.
Yeah.
We just started posting our monthly newsletter on the internet. Or, you know, on our church website, and not mailing it out. And I visit an 82-year-old woman once a month and take communion to her. And she was saying, and she does not get out very much at this point, and she was saying, I feel so left out.
Oh.
of the church. She says, because I don't get there.
But they'll mail it out, anybody asked to be mailed out, the church will do that. But I don't know if there's some miscommunication was up with it, because she should have been getting it by mail, why she wasn't.
We're still working on that issue.
Is the survey and interviews, is there a way of using that as a way of generating interest in more people involved in outreach?
Sure, sure. I mean, when you start asking, it certainly will raise the awareness, and so you may get some questions back, and then, yeah, and then say, well, you could then do that sort of informal matching of talents to various ministries.
Because sometimes there's the dilemma between, you know, community needs, but also the interests of the congregation. So I think part of outreach is to meet the community needs, but it's also to get the congregation involved in things.
Right. So I really, going back to that, what ministries inspire passion? You're not going to get any volunteers if, you know, nobody wants to really do it. I mean, there's definitely some things I'm like, okay, I'll do it, but just this once.
It's a community need, but it's not what I want to do.
Yeah, that's right. Let's face it,
you can't do everything.
Yeah, at our last council meeting, our pastor talked about the three factors that he considers as qualities of a gift, a congregational gift. And one of them is that the person has a passion for it, and that there's a venue for that passion to be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, I can't remember the third one. but those two, you know, even if you just think of those two, you know, so maybe what you're doing with some of the survey is surfacing those passions and helping people find a venue for expressing those passions.
It's a very, to me, it's an ongoing dynamic process, because those people need change. So you're very vested in this ministry, and then at least I do. Some people do something for years and years and years, but I kind of like to mix it up. That's why I'm always doing way too many things. But then there's also the needs of the community changes, the neighborhood changes, your congregation changes. So you're really, not that you need to put a huge amount of effort into this, but I think you're constantly reassessing where you are and who you need to pull in. A really great book that I think is called The Web of Inclusion, that talks about sort of a flat management strategy where, you know, you're always pulling in different people and partners into this kind of flat web in order to meet the customer needs, but to meet the, in our case, to meet the needs of the community. And so looking at it from a, and it's a system that's evolving, and, you know, webs, spider webs are changing all the time, and being rebuilt and repaired. And
we had a woman that had a service dog that turned out to be a therapy dog, and she wanted to do a reading with Rover type program. But the elementary school that was closest to us wasn't interested. So, as it turns out, we have a member of our congregation that is a teacher at a school that's in the neighborhood, but not what we would define as our immediate neighborhood. Well, she was willing to have us come there. So now that's become our school of interest, because they're willing to let us come. So we have the reading with Rover for them. We collect school supplies for them. We're going to clean her. I mean, it's a great deal for her, too. We're going to clean her classroom before school starts.
Oh, wow. That is nice. And that's it. So, yeah, sometimes you may go outside of your neighborhood for those partners, which is great. And I feel like I need to let you all go, because it's
Church. 7:20
Thank you so much for coming and for all your wonderful ideas and comments. I really appreciate it. I always get a lot out of this.
You know about the book, The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down?
Yes, I do. That's a wonderful book.
Yeah, when you talked about the Somali interactions with the community.
Yes. Well, I actually was a young nurse in San Diego when the, you know, the boat people first started coming, and I am telling you, it was like that.
I'm sure.
We were very ill prepared. It was, when I think back now.
That was a heartbreaking book. It really was.
Yeah.
So now, how are you connected with Lake City?
Oh, I took out the wrong one. There we go.
That one goes with the pointer.
It does. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow, actually, when we talk about partnerships, but it's really been a fun, and gosh, I'm learning so much from the Mennonites, I can't even begin to tell you. Oh, they are like the original outreach people, man, but anyway.
Yeah, because they have that storage in their church lobby for the homeless.
They have a little house now.
Oh, the house.
It's called God's Little Acre.
Yeah.
And it expanded out. It started in the lobby, and now it's out in the...
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where we, during a neighborhood assessment process, our undergraduate students actually discovered God's Little Acre, and that started us down that road of working with them.
Well, we volunteer at the Lake City Food Bank, even though we're in Edmonds.
Oh, wow.
But they are open on Saturday, and they're willing to let us come once a quarter, whenever we want. You know, we just say, all right, this is the day we can come.
Oh, nice.
Because our local food bank didn't really have any need for volunteers, or if they did, they wanted to be there every week.
Oh.
And so we wanted outreach projects where people could come one time and not have to make any commitments. So,
so we go to Lake City. So it's
that's interesting.
Our outreach projects go far and wide.
Oh, you're already going.
Yeah,
Respite Care Project.